And welcome to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. Very excited about this week's show. My name is Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
And I'm Eric.
And today we are going to be picking up a conversation from a little while ago where we had talked about the uniquely French term allosexuel. Mm-hmm. For the sake of the audience, we will redefine allosexuel in just a few moments. Now, I do want to acknowledge a representation of a topic that we got wrong. And I want to apologize to our listeners of the New Year's Eve episode. Now, when we recorded our great big gay quiz of the year, which you can catch on our website, www.canqueer.news, we had a great amount of time. It was great fun. It was a great show. We were a panel of all men. So we tried to contain our questions to things that really we have at some authority to speak on. And what we found was, of course, when we're talking about the rise of people feeling empowered to come forward and talk about sex assaults, you can't not talk about Harvey Weinstein. However,
it got the ball rolling.
It did, yeah. I mean, it was women coming forward and speaking about Weinstein that really empowered folks to come forward and speak about Kevin Spacey and many of the other ones. I think we had a list of about 12 men who had been accused by other men. Now, we were speaking to this within the context of every Tom, Dick and Harry, every radio station, every news program you can think of was all talking about Weinstein. And, you know, the Times Magazine's People of the Year, I forget what they were called now.
The People of the Year.
Yeah. The Silence Breakers, that was it. Yeah. So, I want to apologize on behalf of CanQueer for discussing the topic in such a way that didn't really acknowledge the efforts and the strength that it took for these women to come forward, and even the experiences as a whole. We obviously talked about it in, you know, just one element of it, and being a satire show, there was certainly humor applied. If any offense was taken, even if offense wasn't taken, we still apologize for that. Now, I know that you brought up Harvey Weinstein's moaning, and I've actually listened to a recording, and he is unbelievably pathetic in every sense of the word. What are your thoughts on it, Sebastian?
Well, at that time, that's what we were talking about. We were talking about the atmosphere going on at the time during all these various cases. If we were talking about the bigger picture, of course I would have taken a different tack, but we were talking about what it was like in that room, and we were actually mostly talking about the assaulters, not about the victims. If we were talking about the victims, obviously I would have been more sensitive, but like...
Absolutely. So we just want to acknowledge that and apologize for, you know, in isolation, the tone and the comments were inappropriate. However, the rest of the show has been very well received, and it was a lot of fun. So, Eric, are you going to go home and listen to the big gay quiz of the year?
For sure.
That's the first thing in your to-do list. Is you can find us on iTunes, so if you have Alexa or any other smart ennobled home, you can always just be like...
Don't say that name when she's in the room.
I know. But
you'll get her beeping at you.
It's true. But yes, be sure to catch our show, including a Christmas episode, although that was maybe not as timely now as it was 2 or 3 weeks ago. Okay, back to the topic at hand. Speaking of going back in time, a few episodes ago, we discussed the term allosexual. Now, I found this term fascinating because what I really think is interesting is how, and this has come up in conversation before, the idea of homocolonialism and homonationalism, the idea that there is a way to be gay, and that way to be gay is very much centered in Western English.
University-educated bourgeois middle class.
Yeah, if it didn't come out of San Francisco or, you know, the New York, it didn't happen. And how we are gay is represented in many ways. So, for example, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad of Iran said there are no gay men in Iran. He was referring to the Western gay identity, which is true. There aren't any Western gay men in that culture.
Well, but I think another way of looking at it, and this is something a bit more tangible, if you know any women who are from a working class background or from a rural background, they're less likely to use terms like queer. Sometimes they don't even say lesbian, they say they're a gay woman. And they have no problem with the term gay being applied to gay men, lesbian women, bisexuals, and trans people. Like, there is, this is a different form of language where gay can apply to BTQ spectrum. Mm-hmm. And it's not better or worse, it's just a difference. And to state that one way is the right way and another way is the wrong way is kind of unfair and belittling to people who just come from a different background. And of course, there is a big movement in a lot of circles that, you know, you have to use the right words in the right context. And sure, okay, you need standards, because if you don't have standards, who knows what who is talking about. So if you're talking about academic queer studies, there's a codified, centralized language, and it's purely so that everybody understands what everybody else is talking about. And it makes sense in that context.
Being literally on the same page.
Yeah. But the moment you start taking that codex and you apply it to everything and you say, you who are not a university educated, or maybe you are university educated but you didn't take gender and queer studies and you are not familiar with the codex, you are automatically wrong and you can't refer to yourself using this language, then you're getting into, I mean, colonialism is definitely one way of putting it. Sort of bourgeois snobbery is another way of putting it.
I like that. Hashtag bourgeois snobbery.
Well, I mean, it is. It's something.
Power to the proletariat. That's what I say.
Well, it's really weird. Communism hates the working class. A lot of the sort of derivatives of communism, like critical theory, quite often hates the working classes. It's really interesting how, if you know somebody from the countryside or where both parents were like union factory workers, chances are they're using taboo language in their daily lives with other people who use taboo language in their daily lives.
That's within Canada and the West. I was thinking also in terms of how we cover a lot of global news.
Yeah.
And we often see efforts to make gay identities acceptable in like Uganda and Asia.
Yeah.
That's just not how it is. Yeah. You have to look at how sexuality is represented within that indigenous context. And I use indigenous here to mean
local
to that area. You know, you can't just say this is what a gay man looks like and does and apply it universally.
Yeah.
Which brings me in a very roundabout way as to why I find Alexual so fascinating, because being gay, and in our show we talked about the, I think it was LGBTQ community, which is just which is just LGBT with a French accent.
Yeah.
But Alexual But Alexual is French. It is a French term.
Yeah.
It is a French name. And, you know, it is taking ownership of an identity that encompasses not only your sexuality, but also your sexuality within the context of your culture and environment.
If anything, I would say it's distancing yourself from ownership, and that it's more of an academic label to be placed on things, because, like, there's French has, linguistically, I'm not talking about culture or, you know, on principle or something, but linguistically, French is really good at distinguishing categories.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you're talking about hearing, for example, the sense of hearing is l'ouïe.
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking about the act of listening, it's écouter. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole bunch of things like that. So, like, vision versus voir, and, like, there's a whole bunch of, so, like, you know, the abstract noun versus the verb versus the concrete noun. Quite often there's dramatically different words for each one, and it's because sometimes you get levels. So you have a different word for an individual and for a community, or you have the action that you're doing and the thing that it is have different words. So there's less conflation with a lot of that in the language. And I it's tempting to say it's some kind of a principled thing, but it's not. It's just the linguistic tradition of the French language. And it's for the exact same reason that English does a lot of the same stuff. So it's a blend of, like, the French language is a blend of, it's a descendant of Latin with a lot of Greek influence, a lot of Germanic influence, because the north of France was invaded by the Goths, I think. Yeah, the Ostrogoths, multiple times. And then there's a little bit of Brittonic in there, which is a Celtic language spoken in northwestern France. And it's just a nice little hodgepodge, just like English is a nice little hodgepodge.
So,
Yeah, so anyway, so I was saying it's more about distancing yourself, because I don't think an individual would identify as allosexuel. You could say you're part of the allosexuel
exactly,
community.
Exactly, exactly.
So for my question to you then is Alex is allosexual a FU to the English constraints of LGBT, or was it just a technical term that had to be created to fit the language?
Well, it was a terminology that was created to be more inclusive and to not forget about, you know, when we always, you know, the people that are using LGBTQ 2++,
IA.
You know, sometimes we forget some letters.
I think there's four different A's.
And then
as
there's
well.
Like B and B, B and Q.
Yeah.
SNL.
Depending.
SNL. Like it goes on.
Depending. And it's just to be part of a community and to be more inclusive. I cannot be an allosexuel. I can be part of the allosexuel community.
Okay.
You know, as for the difference in between the terminology in English and in French, some people refer themselves as queer.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the queer community,
mm-hmm.
which is not the same thing.
Yeah.
And so that's why, and totally agreeing with what you said about the terminology and trying to find different words for different situation or different, you know, references of the use of the words.
So in the context of academic descriptions, if you were to call me a queer man, I would say, okay, fine. If you're talking about queer theory, if you're talking about...
Yeah, non-normative.
Non-normative. Yeah,
exactly.
But I am not a queer man. I don't identify with the word queer. I identify as gay. Mm-hmm. I generally am on the fence about queer because it is a reclaimed term, and I don't like reclaimed terms. So if you were to say I am among the queers, or there's a queer community and I belong in that community, I'd be like, okay, fine.
I would just call you a homo. But
well, yeah. I mean, you've called me all sorts of things. But yeah, so it's this really weird thing happening in the community now where the people I've spoken to, a lot of people are starting to say, like, don't call me queer. Like, you know, call me a lesbian or call me Susan.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I like
and sometimes, Susan. You know, these are the terms that I usually utilize a lot more just to define or to explain,
mm-hmm.
you know, different sexuality or sexual orientation and stuff like that. But to be honest, I don't refer myself as for a gay man all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Eric, and that's what it is. You yeah. know, I happen to be in love with another man,
mm-hmm.
but I do not define myself as a gay man.
Yeah.
I'm more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it gets really complicated. And even with the term allosexuel, I don't know if you noticed, but we're trying to get away from the sexual diversity because a sexual orientation, it's not all about sexuality either.
Absolutely, yeah.
So we're trying to figure out, and I'm sure that the French language is going to be working on it, has been working on it, to find other terms because sexual orientation is not all about sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's about emotion, affection, attraction, not all about sexuality. So I'm pretty sure, you know, in a couple of years, there's still going to be another term that's going to be coming up trying to define something else.
I have a question then. What about queer spawn? So in the English world, the children of gay couples, so they could be adopted or biological, are called queer spawn, and it was a term that was coined by somebody who is a queer spawn. Now, what we've discussed in previous shows is that you're raised culturally within the queer community, and yet your sexuality may well be straight.
Mm-hmm.
So you are culturally gay, but not gay. You know, would that be someone in the allosexual community then?
Like a straight man going, ooh, listen to her.
Someone who grew up with all of the kind of cultural baggage and experiences. And
well, that's, you know, it's becoming part of the ally. You know, it's like the allies that are within the communities because of their parent being either trans or gay or lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's good. But at the same time, I think that we're working really, really hard to tag ourselves all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So at one point is like, how many tags could we have?
I've got a bucket out the back. It's it keeps filling up. It's a nightmare.
Well, and that's why. And some people are, as for myself, I do, how should I put it? I do put myself within the gay community or the communauté allosexuelle because I'm part of it and I'm really active into it.
Mm.
But at the same time, there's a lot of people that are bisexual, trans, or homosexual that don't identify themselves as the gay community or the allosexual community because they're not just part of it.
Yeah.
They're just in a relationship with somebody from the same sex. They have kids or whatever, and they go along with their daily life. And that's it.
When they go to a gay bar, they're just as much a tourist as a
straight woman.
As a hen party. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, but I do think that we still have a lot to learn about our community as well. And I think that that's a sense that we've lost a lot since the 80s and 90s. We've lost a lot of it.
I want to pick up on learning about the French queer community just after our first break here. We're going to play Ria May's Red Light, and we'll be back just after this. Red light, hoping it'll change your mind. Give me just one more night, more time. Sitting at a red light, practicing your goodbyes. Getting your words just right for the last time. Who's gonna run through your head? Who's gonna lie in your bed? Are they gonna make you happy? Make you forget? Erase everything that we had. Take back every word that we said. Undo everything that we did, that we did, that we did. Can't let you go. It's like a bad dream when you tell me you don't love me no more. To mine, trying to remember what it feels like, running out of patience, patience, trying to think of something that'll save us. You're holding it all in your hands, breaking my heart, cause I can't let you go. It's like a bad dream when you tell me you don't love me no more. Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. Now, we are talking about French queer culture. Now, this is going to be a very sort of silly question, but it's going to be one to sort of start the conversation. So, Sebastian, don't kill me. Mm. Is there a French queer culture in Canada?
It's a really, really difficult...
Outside of Montreal. Because Sainte-Catherine, yes, but outside of Rue Sainte-Catherine.
Yeah, but even there, it's dying down, and we've noticed it for quite a few years. But at the same time, it's so multicultural, so it's becoming really sort of a new culture as well.
Yeah.
With all the Asian community, the Lebanese community, and Anglophone, Francophone, you know, it comes from everywhere now. So is there, like, an actual French... I'm not too sure if it's... I think there is one, but it has been... You know, they took a lot of other culture to make it their own.
What about Quebec City?
Quebec City
that one has
is,
less Anglo in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it has a less... You know, a quite a smaller community as well.
This is true.
Like,
overall population, or just you mean like a smaller?
It's a smaller area. It's a smaller population, and it's a lot more students. Mm. A lot more students, and since there's not a whole lot of gay bars or you know things for the community, it's not as big. They've been having, you know, the Pride Week. They've been having it for what 15, 17 years, maybe I think. So it's fairly new.
Mm-hmm.
Fairly new. They, you know, there's been a lot of history there as well. But is there anything that is particular to the Francophone? I'm not too sure of that. Like, even, no.
From the people I've spoken to, because, I mean, I grew up Franco-Ontarian, so I grew up mostly in Ontario. So I mostly have familiarity with the Franco-Ontarian thing, which is basically you just go to the Anglo bar and don't speak French when you're there. Also because they rough you up. It's people in Ottawa are often blind to the fact that like Ontario outside of Eastern Ontario hate the French. If you go up to like
maybe strongly dislike. We're gonna tamper that down.
I've actually experienced more anti-French bigotry than homophobia living in Southern Ontario. Like easily people being like, oh, how do you spell your name? Oh, you're one of them, and then like the tirades start. But anyway. From the people I've spoken to, it seems more like the queer culture in Quebec is more like small-town gay culture. So if you remember about a year ago when we interviewed the two nice ladies who used to live in Sarnia, remember?
Yeah.
And when they were talking about the lesbian potluck circuit, and
oh,
how,
yes.
Remember that? So it sounds more like that because, like, when I've spoken to my family who live out in Abitibi-Témiscamingue, which is like the entire region has a population of, I think, 20,000. And it really is people go to each other's houses and they just go on a circuit. They take turns hosting, you know, the potluck of the week. And, you know, if it's a man hosting, it'll probably be mostly men, but there might be some women there too because people are friends and people know each other. And, you know, the next time it'll be a woman hosting and it'll be largely women. It's not that men aren't welcome. It's just that, you know, this is a largely female, you know, lesbian potluck. And it seems more like that from what I've spoken, not only just like to the rural Quebec experience, but also just the rural Ontario experience. It seems more similar to that than to, you know, the drag queens and the gay bars and the university crowd. And it seems more like that. It seems a little bit more like small town.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when we refer to the French or, you know, Francophone gay or, you know, allosexuel culture, I think most of the research are in English. So yeah. I think that what we've been trying to do, like what I've been trying to do with a lot of coworkers of research is we wanted to find some research or to actually, you know, make our own so we can actually have some academic theories that can actually apply something, but it's in French. It's not all about, you know, something in the States or in English, so then we can actually refer ourselves when we do, like, example for students in university, that they can actually find some stuff in French. Because it's a totally different way to put it. It's not that they live through it differently. It's just a different way to express it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, so my family's from near Ville-Marie. So Ville-Marie, there's two Ville-Marie in Quebec. There's Ville-Marie, which is a suburb of Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Ville-Marie, which is the third largest city in Abitibi-Témiscamingue, and it has, I think, 12,000 people in it. So
is that a city?
Yeah.
Or is that just like a town hall?
Yeah, no,
like,
that's where people go to get nice clothes.
It's congregation at mass.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
And I actually do remember once I was in Le Gouffier. So if you know that area, then you know Le Gouffier. It literally just means the Waffle House, but it's like the most famous Waffle House in the area. There's a chicken and waffles place nearby, which is slightly less good than Le Gouffier. But anyway, I was in Le Gouffier. And then just offhand, like, there was a waiter there, and he was overhearing my conversation with my brother, and he made a face, and he's like, yes, I'm gay. And he's like, that's nice, but do you want croton with your toast? And croton is just like this lard spread that you put on toast that's a French-Canadian thing.
Which is really good.
It can be really good, but if it's not good, it's foul. But no, like, generally speaking, the approach that I've gotten in the countryside is, like, who cares? Like, I don't care that you're gay. Like, that's your business, whatever. And it is that sort of, like, I mean, in this case, it is sort of small-town working-class values of just, like, look, if you're good people, you're good people. Who cares about the details? Just don't hurt anybody. But again, I mean, that's... most of my experience in French culture is either Franco-Ontarian or deep countryside rural Quebec. And in both cases, people just sort of broadly, they kind of shrug. And there's not a lot of research about that. Like, mm-hmm. what is it like being that? And I, multiple times I've asked my family, and earlier you mentioned history, and there's not much history. But the history is fairly recent because of the Quiet Revolution. So for the longest time, there were no gays in Quebec. They just didn't exist. Because you got married and you had babies and you had about 14 of them. That's just what you did. Mm-hmm. Because it was...
Well, it's... I just want to clarify here. There were presumably homosexuals.
People
had a preference for the same sex. But gay is in the identity didn't exist. Mm-hmm. Okay, I just want to clarify in case we get some angry letters being like, there were gays in Quebec!
No, but it's like... famously, up until around the 30s or 40s, Quebec was largely run by the church. And if you lived in a small town community, you were more likely to obey the local minister than you were the bylaws or even the country if you were told to do a thing. People, it was very, very serious. And then the Quiet Revolution happened. And if you're not familiar with the Quiet Revolution, dear listener, basically it was Quebec went from being about 150 years behind the rest of the world to the gem of the future. So, like, Montreal in the late 70s was the city of the future. Like, without a doubt, if you watch any movie taking place in Montreal 1970s, it looks like any other city in the world late 80s. Like, they were ahead of the times. And it happened in, like, a 30-year span. It was so fast how quickly they evolved and updated. And they basically just turned into New York City overnight. Mm-hmm. And that's how, like, Cirque du Soleil got started and, like, entire musical genres came out of it. But a lot of that was the embracing of secularism. It was sort of the embracing of the Enlightenment. So, like, the philosophy from, like, about 200 years ago about humanism and individualism. And it happened super quickly. And it was during that time that the gay identity in Quebec, such as it is, formed. But it was so recent. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of, like, by maybe the mid-80s, a lot of people would say the Quiet Revolution, like, it didn't end. It wasn't like a start date and end date, but it was around there that it kind of petered out. And then HIV happened, and then a whole generation got wiped out, and then the internet happened and kicked the generation while it was down, and it was... So yeah, I don't know if there is an alternative timeline where Quebec could have had a gay community like they have in New York City or San Francisco mm-hmm. or LA. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and at the same time, is in the past, what, six, almost 10 years, the community or, you know... society has changed so much because we're more about individual,
mm-hmm.
ourselves. Everything happens through internet, so you don't have to actually meet each other. So you can actually talk with a whole bunch of people, mm-hmm. learn about, you know, a whole bunch of stuff, which is not always true because it's on the internet. So then I think that's where the bigger gap is. Like, the biggest gap, I think that's where it is, because of internet, because everybody's doing their own thing. What I do find really interesting is, for the past year, I've been getting involved with a new research group with Université du Québec à Montréal, mm-hmm. UQAM, with UCO, Université du Québec en Outaouais, and other French universities. And we're actually trying to work on different ways of understanding different communities as for youth, mm-hmm. youth in like bigger city, smaller city, like rural, elderly people, like how, you know, when you're trans people, you know, when you're trans man or woman, mm-hmm. or if you're a gay man or gay woman, how do you go about, you know, being in a home or whatever, mm-hmm. and a workplace, family places. So we have different categories, mm-hmm. I would say, and we're really working on a 7-year program or a 7-year research in French all throughout Canada, mm-hmm. trying to understand a little bit more how it is, how to be more inclusive, what's their reality, and how to, you know, make it more alive, if mm-hmm. we should say. So I'm really really glad to be part of that, and here in the Outaouais region, we're actually three there's two teachers from UCO and myself in a nonprofit organization that works with youth. So it's going to be quite interesting to see what's at the end of the research in 6 years now, what's the result of all the French community in different categories. Sorry for the term, but that's how it is. And it's going to be really interesting to see, like, even in within the different age groups as well, all in French. So that's going to be really, really, really interesting. And I think that's the first time in French history that we'll have that. So maybe we don't have enough, but I'm really looking forward to see what's going to be happening in the next 6 years.
Does that speak to kind of what we're seeing a trend with? You know, we saw the sort of extreme individualism, which you referred to earlier, and you said the internet kicked us when we were down. And what I find now, and as a millennial, I feel like I can speak to all millennials that exist in the country.
Each of them, yes.
Each and every one of them, including Steve. You know, and I can say that there is a trend happening now towards rebuilding community. And it's something that I've seen most in the queer community. We became so isolated when Grindr took off. You know, gay bars died. And it was just, you know, what do you have? And now you have like softball leagues and soccer teams and way more gay people taking up sports who wouldn't traditionally be in sport. They're not sporty types. They're not gym rats. But rather they're going to these sporting groups because that's where the community is. That's where you can have fun and hang out and there's no expectation of sex. It's not on Grindr. And essentially,
well, I mean, you say that, but people are expecting sex.
Well,
because they're human.
Well, okay. But my point is that what we're seeing now in
they're anticipating it the last
2 or 3 years is a move back towards recreating community, which got lost from the AIDS generation. I mean, it's taken us 20 odd years to realize that we've lost something so unbelievably valuable, and that's you know, that's a sense of community. But for our listeners out there, it's a I would compare it to having, you know, the congregation of your church. It is a group of strangers or who then become friends who are there as a support network with a shared interest, which is either softball or Jesus. You know, and it's kind of like having that net is something that hasn't existed in the gay community. And I feel now that with creating the sense of community, we're rebuilding that. And from what you're telling me, we're seeing that in French Canada as well. Is there something that you say that that is being replicated in Montreal, Quebec City, and across Canada?
I think it's slowly they're trying something. And I do think that because of all the people that are in your... in your age group, I would say. But a lot of them that have, you know, they've been, they were, some of them, they were born and they all had the rights to be whoever they are, you know, as for, you know, same-sex marriage, having kids and all that. So some of them didn't know that it was not possible before, you know. So before 97, here in Canada, there was not a whole lot of, you know, human rights for the allosexual community. So I think that that had to count for a lot of the not the urge of, you know, being within a community, because everybody's trying to be more inclusive, going in regular bars and being with their same-sex partner and having fun, having a drink, having a, you know, a nice romantic dinner, and without being judged or being pointed at or whatever. So they go about their, you know, daily routine and they don't feel the need of. But at the same time, I find that it's really interesting or really important that people remember their history, because everything is not there necessarily to stay. You know, all rights could be removed anytime.
Yeah.
And we know that. But some of them, they don't know that. And that's maybe a part of it is about, you know, not being, you know, really politic about, you know, knowing our history and getting involved and knowing that, you know, it's part of it is a lot of politics. But it can, I don't know. I don't want to get too involved in. Yeah, because well, I'll get.
On a similar note to do with the history of the French. Because this is actually something that fascinates me, is the history of the French in Ontario. And it was a few years ago. I just went on a reading streak, and I read everything I could. So let me set something up for you. Do you remember, I think it was 3 years ago when World Pride was in Toronto? Was it 3 or 4 years ago?
I think it was four.
Okay. Were you in Ottawa at that time?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did you go to Centretown Pub during World Pride weekend?
Probably not.
Because the Friday and Saturday night when World Pride was in Toronto, the gay bar of Ottawa was French-speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the Anglos went to Toronto, or all the Anglos with the money to travel went to Toronto. And all of a sudden you go there and everyone was speaking French. CP's became a French-speaking gay bar for one night. I think you were there.
I was in World Pride.
Oh, okay. Who was I there with? I can't remember. It may have been Stéphane. And he was just like, what is going on? Because everybody's like, I didn't know you were French. Are you French? You speak French? Your accent. Are you from Chateau Gay? Like, and it was just really weird. And, you know, realizing just how many French speakers there were in Ottawa who just don't reveal it. Like, people who, like, shamefully live, you know, in secrecy of being a natural, you know, from a French-speaking family. And if you want to talk about history, this gets back to Article 17, if you know about Article 17. Article 17 is the dark, shady history of the city of Ottawa. And it was a city bylaw in Ottawa. Now, Ottawa was a much smaller city back then. It was like you could walk across it in about an hour and a half. And it just sort of started absorbing all the local townships around it. But anyway, in the city of Ottawa, the French language was banned in public spaces. And it was enforced in schools. So all the primary and middle schools, you could not speak French in the halls. So it was an early attempt at erasing French culture from the Ontario landscape. And it lasted, I think, 9 years, Article 17 was around. And it's part of what kicked off the Quiet Revolution. It's part of what got people in Quebec interested in French language rights, was actually something that happened in Ontario. But there is this sort of like lingering, weird sort of maybe you shouldn't speak French in public. And then the referendum back in the 90s did not help, because it was after, I think, 95 when the referendum was. That was when I started getting harassed for being French, living in Burlington. So there is this interesting sort of outside of Quebec experience of like what it's like being French outside of Quebec, because it is like, I don't want to say we're an oppressed people, because that's not what's going on, but there is this weird cultural thing, and then you lump gay on top of that, and it's just it's double indemnity. It's intersectional oppression.
Exactly.
We're gonna pick up on that intersectionality in just a few moments. We're gonna play Contre Parets, Drapeau Blanc, and I may have. I'm either mispronouncing it or I've written it down wrong. Either way, we'll find out.
Is it drapeau? Drapeau blanc? Which would be like white flag.
Yes.
There you go.
There we go. And we'll be back just after this.
Comment t'écrire que les journées demeurent longues? J'admire le ciel qui s'étend pour faire de l'ombre. Et t'écrire, c'est dire au revoir et pour de bon. Mon ciel bercé, enchanté, je t'éteins. Un bord à l'autre pour me perdre, pour te plaire. Je t'ai leurré de voyage, de rester sage et d'or et d'or. Et châtie que j'abandonne, j'en ai brûlé ton drapeau blanc. Tant que les notes résonnent, je jure qu'on peut arrêter le temps. Ne me laisse jamais seule, ne me laisse jamais seule. Qu'on ne se laisse plus seul avec le temps. Qu'on avait conduisait hors de toutes les raisons pour s'enfuir loin de ces cloisons. Tandis qu'on se perd dans ces voies invalides, ces instants qu'on perd à force de construire le vide étreinte.
qui ne se tiennent que de raisons. Et chaque dit que j'abandonne, j'en ai brûlé ton drapeau blanc. Tant que les notes résonnent, je jure qu'on peut arrêter le temps. Ne me laisse jamais seul.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. We're looking at Franco-queer culture. Now, what I found interesting in my visits to Montreal, and especially in Montreal Pride, is that it operates very much like a big urban metropolitan city. Like, that is what it is, mm-hmm. hands down.
Yeah.
I think Pfizer sponsored them, and for the layman, that's Viagra is what they is what they make. So, I mean, when you've got Viagra sponsoring your Pride Parade, you've made the big league, is what I'm going to say. Just realize the double entendre there. But we're going to keep going with this. But the idea that I'm kind of approaching here is in Quebec, in Montreal specifically as well, you have so many people and such a robust community that it is almost like its own neighborhood. Like, I think of like Chinatown, and like there's so much going on, so many unique things. We did a show with Queer Tech Montreal, which is a group of tech entrepreneurs and folk in high-tech businesses coming together and building a community which kind of applies all of those together. What is your experience of Montreal, and how does that compare to the rest of Canada?
I would say that maybe 10 years ago was a little different. I think it was more into, that sense of community. Now I think that it's really dying down. Like, it's just like Church Street in Toronto. Mm-hmm. You know, it's dying down.
It's more of a tourist gimmick.
Yeah, pretty much. And everybody, back in the days, like maybe 10 years ago, it was still cool to live in proximity of the village in Montreal, or, within the village. And now everybody's moving out, and even the businesses are closing down. They're not putting it, as much money within the gay village. Mm-hmm.
The sex market is still doing fairly well, though.
Well, like any other places.
And by that, I mean there's multiple gay porn studios based out of Montreal, and there are so many male strippers. Mm-hmm. There's six strip clubs?
Yeah.
On Rue Sainte-Catherine, or in the area anyway?
Yeah, but what's funny is most of the dancers are heterosexual.
Well, I mean, that's probably for the best. I mean, it would for their own safety, it's better if they're not interested in.
But that's when I come, when I was saying that we should be separating sexual orientation from sexuality. And I think that that's hurting Montreal a lot more. Of course, there will always be like somewhat of a market for sexuality or sex. Not sex club, but all about the strip clubs and saunas and stuff like that. Mm. And I find that there is a community, and thank God for all the university and colleges where they have a lot of association that are, for those people that are coming from smaller towns within, Quebec or Montreal and all the other cities around, they come and they actually can be themselves. So, of course, for them, it's like a really nice area where they can actually exchange with other people, socialize, learn about themselves, and, trying to, be who they are without having to hide or anything like that. And I think that that's one of the reasons why Montreal will always stay somewhat of a, not a métropole of the gay community or the communauté homosexuelle, but I think that that's where, that's the only reason why it keeps it alive.
Yeah.
And with other university, for the people that are, you know, they want to go a little further up in the queer studies and stuff like that. But other than that, I think everything else is going on the internet, or everybody's just feeling comfortable in any bar. They will go on Le Plateau in Montreal and feel really comfortable not having to go to the village. I don't want to say that it's not there anymore, but I think that it's fading out, and I don't think it will necessarily come back to where it was, because we've moved on. And I think that is, at one point, it is a good thing, because that's because we're, you know, we're,
we don't need the refuge
exactly as much as we used to in the 80s, 70s, or even in the 90s. Until the mid 90s, that's where it was like it started to grow a little bit more, and that we could be pretty much who we were. I'm losing the track. But
no worries. Actually, it brings me nicely to my next question, which I think combines your previous point here, Sebastian. You know, we're essentially talking about how in major metropolitan areas, it's a combination of being gentrified and priced out. Let's acknowledge that. But also the fact that we don't need that refuge, that space as much as we did before. However, the need for community has reemerged in other ways. Mm-hmm. I mentioned the softball leagues. You know, do you find that there is a difference in Quebec and the rest of Canada in terms of being a French homosexual? So you talked about the intersectionality of having both of them sort of ruled against you. Whereas, you know, is that, I assume that's not the case in Quebec, which is French, you know.
Yeah, but we still have that same reality here in the Ottawa region, because a lot of the services or the businesses are in Ontario, in Ottawa. So, and a lot of people don't speak necessarily English, and they don't feel as comfortable to go across and go in the bars and talk with people, because if you want to socialize and you don't, you're not that comfortable with the language, and unless you go with a bunch of other French speaking people, then you can go and have fun. But, you know, a lot, and that's one of the reasons why I did try to work a lot on having some more inclusive bars, little small businesses, local businesses that are, they identify themselves as more inclusive for the homosexual community, so people can actually be there and not having to cross over. That's why we have the French drag shows here in Gatineau.
You're talking about Chicago, aren't you? Okay.
For sure.
That's actually a solution that I've seen in all sorts of like small towns and whatnot, where you have a bar that has like a gay night. Sometimes it'll be like two Friday nights a month or something like that, or every weekend or something like that. It'll be, you know, they'll get in drag queens, they'll get in a DJ who plays, you know, slightly better music, let's be honest. Maybe they'll have like some kind of happy hour cocktail. But that seems to be the direction in general of the community, that you have these sort of open anything goes type bars with a theme night. And which is actually better in the long run, because then if you have like a men's night and a ladies' night, then the, because I know so many lesbians who go to gay bars because they don't know where else to go, and then they can't meet any women, and all the women who are there are straight women. But it's good to have a ladies' night, and that the Lookout had a ladies' night for the longest time, and they had better music, I'm gonna have to say. That was because the DJ was so good. But that's unrelated. I think,
you know, maybe is a possible solution to have Franco-queer takeovers, almost, you know. You'd mentioned CPs when World Pride was in Toronto, and it just became French.
It just became French.
And this idea that people don't speak French if they're in the linguistic minority, or they think they're in the linguistic minority. You know, how do you flip that image? And that really does speak to why these spaces had been so important in the past.
Yeah.
Is, you know, you create an environment where you are the majority, not the minority. So then to go into, it's the same with languages, you know, when you go to a pub where you're in the linguistic minority.
But at the same time, we realize that sometimes when you go in Ottawa, and as you were mentioning it a little earlier, you know, if I'm a French Canadian man, but I'm bilingual. Mm-hmm. Most times, because I'm bilingual, I will speak English when I go in Ottawa. Yeah. So sometimes you realize that you're speaking in English with a whole bunch of men that are francophones.
Yeah.
So that's when it comes out to, and a lot of them, it's like they don't even notice that people are francophone because they don't have that much of an accent or whatever. And all the time, every time that they see each other, they speak English.
On a related note, this is just like linguistic politeness. I remember once I was at a house party when I lived in Japan, and all the foreigners were speaking Japanese and all the Japanese people were speaking English because people wanted to be polite to the other side. And then when somebody pointed it out, everybody laughed, and then they just kept doing it again. And all the English speakers were speaking Japanese and the Japanese were speaking English again. And it was this really weird, but that's it. It's what happens. You feel like when you're in the other space that you should probably out of politeness conform, except English speakers in Montreal generally just speak English, even if they speak French. So there's a complaint there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So any final thoughts on what the future might hold for Franco-Canadians?
Well, I think that it all comes down to I think it's important to feel your roots and to feel comfortable with, I don't know, like all the history behind it. And I think that we should know or learn a little bit more of our history, but keep it alive as well. And that's the same thing as for just being simply Quebecers in Canada.
Yeah.
That's a whole different thing, but it's hard enough just to keep your language. And we've noticed that, you know, French is dying slowly.
Yeah.
And that's why it is important. But to be part of the, you know, allosexuel community and being French as well, I think that we have to maintain our roots, even if it's really nice. And I feel really privileged to, you know, to have both language, like both, you know, French and English. But I think that we still have to learn and maintain our history alive.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for. We'll be playing out with Ari Mafat's Debout, and we'll be back next week on Can Queer. Thanks for listening.